Welcome to Stand Out, for entrepreneurs and small businesses who want to stand out in their industry and grow their business. I am Diana from monogrampublishers.co.uk, and in this show, we'll explore how to increase authority, define your unique value proposition, and create products and services your audience will love. Welcome back to Stand Out. In today's episode, we're diving deep into the art of content generation with one of the fastest authors at Monogram Publishers, Ellie Luther. She has been published twice in less than 2 years, writing two long-form books on Italian wine and becoming an automatic authority in that niche, which is an amazing achievement. She has been a consultant in the sustainability space for years, and she leads the content strategy for global agriculture alliances. So she knows exactly what it takes to create content that speaks to a specific industry and amplifies reach. Ellie is joining us to share her journey and share some tips, because I know that one of the biggest blockers people have when faced with the prospect of writing a book is that it feels daunting and overwhelming. And Ellie will be able to simplify this process, so by the end of this podcast, you will feel super excited and empowered to get started on this journey yourself. Thank you, Ellie, so much for being here with us today.
Hi, Deanna. You're so welcome. It's really, really lovely to be here. And obviously for me, really special to talk to my passion project rather than my day-to-day work. So really lovely to be here.
Amazing. Ellie, so I would love to start by talking about maybe the books you've written and maybe giving us a bit of an overview about them.
Yeah, of course. So as you kindly mentioned, I have launched into the world of Italian wine, which for me is totally, as I said, a passion project. It's not linked at all to my day job, as it were. So I have published two books with your help, as you know, but for the audience's sake. First of which is The Italian Wine Connoisseur. And the second book, my most recent one, which has recently been published, yay, thanks to your help, is The Ultimate Italian Wine Tour Pocket Guide. So what inspired me to write that book? Obviously, it was the second in a journey in a series that I plan to continue, which is really unpacking that Italian world of wine and the niche that you helped me to find and build on. So for me, it was an obvious next step. I really dug deeper into the world of wine experiences and tours available in the places that I had referred to in the first book. So I think for those of you thinking of a series or of an obvious like next step to a book, you kind of think about what makes sense chronologically or what makes sense to tell that part of the story next. So it's been a really great process for me, and certainly eased by Deanna's amazing help and the team there. And I think, as she mentioned, I hope I can definitely make you feel less scared about the prospect of doing so, because if I can publish a book, then anyone really can.
Brilliant, Ellie. Thank you so much. And I'm really curious about your writing process. I'd love to know, how do you approach this process, and what does a typical writing day look like for you?
Okay, sure. I would say, and I think I'm talking to the audience here who will feel the same, it's not as if I'm a writer, inverted commas, so I don't have a day planned out that, for me, I think of myself as a writer, I had to orchestrate a day to give myself that time. So thankfully, I work freelance. So that's if you're in that fortunate position, that's a very good place to be, because you know you're the master of your own time. So the only thing it takes is discipline to put aside your blocks of time for your actual work and then your blocks of time for writing. And I think if you've got that gift of being freelance, it's very easy to say, okay, this morning I'll do my day job or do my freelance work, and in the afternoon I'll put pens down and I will just concentrate on this specifically. So that was important for me, to have blocks of time. I think the flexibility of knowing I could do it in the evening or when I'm feeling more creative was a huge, huge help. And I think not getting blockers in terms of research, knowing what you want to then sit down and write about is key. So do the research first and then know that you really can sit down and hammer out 2 or 3 hours of writing.
Brilliant. That's super interesting. And you mentioned also something that I would love to expand more on, which is sort of when you're more creative. I know a lot of people might say, you know what, I'm a night owl. My creative time is literally in the middle of the night. What was that like for you?
It was exactly that. It was rolling with that flow of what felt right, because I didn't have a deadline as such. You know, when you're self-publishing, you don't have an agent or a publisher saying to you, oh my God, you need to get this done. And the process is brand new to you. So I think knowing that you have the freedom to do this because it's a goal you want to achieve is actually more empowering. I really wanted to do this. If anything, I found it hard to be as dedicated to my day job because I wanted to be writing this book. And if you're doing this because it's something that you have always had a passion for and not known how to branch out and really own it, or if it's a side hustle that you want to become your primary business, I think it's going to feel really right and you're going to want to get your teeth into writing about it. I would say in terms of being a night owl or being a morning person, use those windows when you can. I think make the most of when those creative juices are flowing. If you're lying in bed at night thinking, oh, I'd love to write a really cool chapter right now, literally get up and do it, because this book isn't going to write itself. You're probably working around other commitments and other jobs and other things you have to do in the day. So go with it. Go with a really flexible routine of when your creative juices are flowing. Punch out all you can.
That's super interesting. And actually, I suppose you're quite unique as well, kind of having the pleasure of seeing how you work. I can almost tell that you really have a grasp of flow, and you really know when you sit down and you start working and writing, it just seems to flow very naturally. And I do know that a lot of people really struggle with writer's block. So I wonder how you keep your creativity flowing in a way that really seems almost natural.
I think that piece about being natural is really important. If you're going to write a book and own a niche, whether that's a business interest or a personal venture, I don't think you can pretend to be something you're not. And if you're going to sell and if you're going to do well and if you are going to own that niche, it's going to be because it's genuine. And there's no one else out there who is you. So that is the niche in itself. Use your personality, use the flow of what comes to you. And I'm assuming I'm talking to people who are all writing nonfiction here. So they're owning a business emporium or a passion project, in which case use that authentic tone of voice, because you can smell it a mile off if someone isn't being creative. And that will mean you don't get those blockers, because actually what comes to your head, what comes to you that you want to write, is what you should go with.
Yeah, and that's really quite a lovely thing that I've noticed in your work, in your books, is that you have a very unique voice that really comes through your books. And you mentioned this sort of idea of using your voice and being quite authentic. Do you have any tips about how somebody can maintain that flow of ideas whilst keeping true to that authentic voice when you're writing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, as you know, working together, I guess you did get a real sense for me still wanting to be kind of funny and silly and not stuffy. And that is the tone that I have gone for with I Love Italy. So you'll see that it's created for millennials, for 30-somethings who are just branching out into a slightly more complex and more sophisticated wine world. So for me, that is reflected exactly in the age I'm at, the space in my life I am at. So I didn't need to venture too far from the truth. I'd say in the cases that if you're writing about something you really do know about, it shouldn't be swaying too far from your truth. So if you're a really empowered owner of a business and you're really keen to start writing about that, that is something you're going to know really well. So I would say you shouldn't be swaying too far from the truth in the first place. So that authentic tone of voice will come really, really genuinely. But for me, thankfully, it was funny, it was light, it was colloquial. It was easy for me to go to write with that tone of voice that suggested, look, I'm not an expert any more than you are. Let's do this journey together. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was definitely the tone of voice I felt comfortable with, that I felt like I could own, because it was true.
And that's also quite an interesting approach to writing a specialty book in a niche that obviously has traditionally been quite stuffy and quite complex. And in so many ways, you've been able to democratize access to wine and wine knowledge in a super fun way. And I suppose that also comes from understanding your audience and what they actually need from you at that stage. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, how you were able to sort of find that the audience needed this tone of voice to be able to really enjoy wine once again?
Yeah, so I think doing some sort of, it doesn't have to be formalized market research, but when I say market research, knowing your audience and knowing who you're writing for, there's no writing style or no book that is going to appeal to everyone. So you're better off knowing who you are targeting and being really good at that. So my market research, inverted commas, was my set of friends who we all go to a dinner party and we take a bottle of wine that's £12 because we assume that's better than the £7 bottles, thinking we've done our bit in terms of, you know, going a bit more sophisticated. So I knew there was a gap there, because even if I'm looking at my friendship group and my immediate peers, there would be a gap there to know more about wines and to have something telling you, where do I go to learn about it? How do I know which ones are actually quality, how do I understand an appellation system, all those things. If I base it on what me and my friends know, people don't yet know it. So there's an obvious gap there. But I would just say your market research, however formal or informal, is going to be vital, because you will have one audience sector that need your work and that you should be speaking to directly.
That's brilliant, Ellie. Thank you so much. And yes, obviously at Monogram, we create this service and we worked very closely with you to understand that audience, to understand the needs of this particular market that you wanted to speak to.
Yeah, so we did a lot of work together, didn't we? And I think you were really listening to me and really taking that on board. And I think you creating that customer avatar for me, which is something I never would have known how to do, or the importance of having that available, meant I literally had a character to put a name and a face to that represented my audience. And, you know, I explained what I needed that to look like. And it was basically a clone of myself and my mates, which was really, really invaluable and a great skill that Monogram offer that, yeah, I wouldn't have known where to start with that.
You know, and it's really interesting. A lot of entrepreneurs create businesses based on their own needs.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the audience can be yourself. And in this case, I guess that's really made it quite easy for us to work together as well, because you knew so much about the pain points of that audience in terms of Italian wine, because you were experiencing them yourself. So that was a really, really lovely process. So in terms of fears, I do know, and we do get feedback about the fear of actually writing a book, you know, thinking about what's going to happen in terms of the publishing process. So I know that perhaps you have some concerns. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about how you were able to overcome these?
Yeah, of course. And I don't think there would be anyone out there who hasn't written a book before, published a book before, who wouldn't have some questions and some concerns and, yeah, worries about whether they can actually do this. I would say from the very first time we spoke, I just got all those questions off my shoulders about, yeah, but what if I go and print all these books and nobody buys it, blah, blah, blah. And I think those were my questions. But actually, once you understand self-publishing and that you know, you sell the book on demand, so it's actually only when people order the book that you're paying to print it and then getting the royalties from that. That was part of the process that I then, once I had answered, was way less concerned about. Because if you think about it, apart from the cost of having somebody nurture you through this process, which is worth its weight in gold times 10, you don't have any other outgoings because it's your own work. If you're writing it, if you're not getting a ghostwriter to do this for you, which is also fine, there's not a huge spend going into it. So you actually have very little to lose. And I would say trying to have that approach to the whole journey, you have everything to gain and very little to lose, because once that book is sat on Amazon or whatever your platform is, it's probably going to sell itself. And if it doesn't, it's probably because you haven't marketed it in quite the right way for the right audience. So down the line, in the foreverness that it's going to be on there, you're probably going to do really well out of this. So I'd say those concerns are right to be answered, but then you will realize that there is everything to win here.
Yeah, and there's something quite amazing about seeing your book for sale, you know, and people actually buying it, because obviously you've had a really good reception to the books and people really love them. But also I'm interested because, of course, the success is incredible and very well deserved. But I know that there have been certain people that perhaps that have given reviews that haven't been as positive. And I think that's also the nature of, doing anything that really is going to be out there. But also it's the fear that some people have, that fear of judgment. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that, about certain perhaps criticism that you've received on the books, and how you've been able to actually reframe this in an empowering way.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I guess you and I have spoken a little bit about this. And fortunately, I guess for myself and other things I've done in my life, I tend not to take those too harshly and I take it on the chin. And I know you and I have laughed about that, in that it's a great thing for me because I'm not going to cry myself to sleep at night if there's one bad review versus 20 good ones. I guess a lot of us know now, in a world of social media and things like that, and we see that celebrities say things like, you know, I got one horrible comment saying my baby's ugly. It's like, well, you haven't listened to the 20,000 other lovely comments saying your baby's beautiful. That one's gone in. You have to not let that be your story. And like I said before about really owning your sector of the audience, think of it as if it hasn't pleased someone, they're probably not the right audience for you. So I have had a few comments about this book isn't, basically some of the content perhaps isn't professional enough for someone, or I got a fact wrong, you know, a percentage grape split to make a certain wine varietal. I take that with a pinch of salt because that person probably is a connoisseur of wine, knows far more about than me about the topic, which is fine. There's plenty of space out there for people to know more about you. I wasn't necessarily writing the book for a wine connoisseur of 48 years who has tried every wine under the sun. I'm writing the book for 30-somethings who want to branch out into a more sophisticated wine world. So I take that with a pinch of salt. It doesn't make them a bad person, but it equally doesn't need to go into your brain or your sphere and how you think about yourself and your wonderful achievements. So thankfully for me, I didn't lose any sleep over it, and on to the next one.
Amazing. And that's such a lovely and strong and amazing attitude really to have. And I really hope that everybody can get a little bit of this energy through this podcast, because Ellie's one of the people that are completely confident in what she's doing. And when she's not, she just goes out there and tries things out, which is an incredibly brave thing to do. And also, I mean, this leads a little bit to this idea of the imposter syndrome. And I think because you were also starting in a new niche, and although of course you've worked for years in the sustainability sector, agricultural sector, so you know a lot about sort of the overarching areas, but Italian wine per se was quite new for you.
Well, I guess it links to what we spoke about just then. I tend not to dwell on the things that aren't going to help me. And I guess thinking I'm not good enough for this, I don't know enough about this, wasn't ever going to be constructive. I would say my day job and the work I've done as a consultant for years in food systems and global moments and agriculture and food alliances certainly didn't feel to me like there was any real link to Italian wine. This is definitely, for me, a passion project on the side. There was the crossover that did exist was more marketing expertise or understanding how to talk to an audience. But in terms of subject matter, it could be as distant to me as rock climbing. So I definitely think of them as two totally separate subjects. And I think overcoming the imposter syndrome, for me, it comes fairly naturally, and I'm very lucky with that. I would say have the confidence to write about something that you already know the niche is there. So me and you did some great work around that. And again, that's something I wouldn't have got from just plucking this niche on my own. We sat down and talked about the things I'm interested in and your work on the analytics of where, of niching down and finding where there's enough of a niche that loads of people haven't already written about it and it's not oversaturated was invaluable, because I might have had wine as an overarching topic, not necessarily Italian wine. So I do think finding a niche with Monogram really helped. And then once I knew I had a niche, I had the confidence to know that there wasn't already a leader in that niche. So of course there's space for me, and just be confident with that. And again, what's the worst that happens? You're not. You haven't lost anything by trying, and you probably can get there by marketing social media and doing enough work after the fact that gets you there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And in terms of, because you've sold quite a few books. I mean, when we say quite a few, it's almost 3,000 books already in the space of 2 years. So that's amazing. And can you share maybe some effective marketing strategies that have worked for you? Because I do know that also you are huge on social media. You love social media, and that's sort of where you've done a lot of your marketing efforts through. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. And I would say the work you do in marketing after the fact is equally as important, because otherwise you will end up with a great product that you've worked really hard on, live, online, for everyone there to see, but they can't see it. And it's a really cruel irony. So the work that you do afterwards, when you think, oh my God, I've just worked so hard and I'm finally finished, is just as important. So I'd say for me, a lot of the things I read about making sure that I'm targeting the right people who are already interested in your niche is really, really valuable. So target the Facebook groups, the groups out there on social media that already exist with your specific topic in mind. So there are groups out there already called I Love Italy Wine, I Love Italian Wine and Holidays, I Love Florence, I Love Rome. So for me, that's a captive audience of 4,000 or 5,000 potentially on a Facebook group who already are interested in the topic you've written a book about. So from there, you can write to the admin of those pages or those groups and say, look, I really want to share something. This isn't a sales pitch in the way that, you know, people might dread. It's an opportunity for somebody to see something I've written about that they're definitely going to be interested in. So making the most of those groups, I'd say being really active with new accounts. The thing is, you're not going to sell to a load of people. Once you've done your own audience that you already maybe have on social media, you're kind of in a silo. So you need to go beyond that. You need to speak to, you're in a bit of an echo chamber of your own friends and family. So you need to go bigger than that. You need to start befriending people on social media who are interested in those things or who are in the same industry. They're wine writers, wine followers, wine influencers. And then get one of them who already has way more followers than you to do one shout out in return for something that you might do for them. So it's just thinking in that collaborative mind and what I can do for someone else so that what they do for me is really beneficial to a bigger audience.
Brilliant. And I hope you guys are taking notes here, because Ellie in the space of 5 minutes has just shared an incredibly powerful marketing strategy. So thank you so much for that. So you mentioned work. Of course, we worked together to develop this from idea up until, you know, publishing and beyond. So how has working with our publishing company helped you in your journey? And what advice would you give to authors considering a publishing partner?
I would say it's been completely invaluable for me. I have found that if I hadn't have had you and your team to kind of hold my hand in terms of confidence through the process, I certainly would have found it hard to know where to start, basically. So those initial conversations we had, which I think, you know, I openly just had lots of questions, every question under the sun, and you painstakingly answered them, set me up to then have the confidence to go ahead and do this. And I think because you're so great at kind of chunking into smaller digestive pieces of advice or actions that I need to go away and do before we meet the next time, made it just more digestible for me. We didn't talk about, in the beginning, we weren't talking, I guess, about, you know, the end product and when I'm on Amazon. We would talk about, okay, by next time we meet, Ellie, why don't you tell me what your ideal customer looks like and what you see the book outline as potentially covering. And then you'd go away and do the outline. So I think that regular meeting milestone and way of doing things for me was really, really powerful. And yeah, I felt like somebody was holding my hand. I felt like somebody saw me through this whole process. As much as your friends and family are probably there for you, they're not going to hear about the day-to-day struggles of having a blocker on chapter 3 or, you know, not hitting your word count that week or things like that. So I would definitely say, unless you're a superstar self-publishing author already, in which case you're probably not listening to me, you can't beat having somebody like Monogram to be on this journey with you.
Well, thank you so much. Of course, for us has been an incredible journey to work with you so closely and to just really be able to help you from that initial inception all the way to now, which of course we continue to work together in future projects that you've got planned.
Of course.
Ellie, thank you so much for sharing all of these insights. It's absolutely fantastic to hear all of your journey, you know, the things you've learned, and certainly to just get a little bit of that sense of fearlessness that really has come through the books themselves, you know, your tone of voice. Everything that you've done has had that mark, and it's been a real pleasure to work with you. For everybody listening, you can find Ellie's books at Amazon. These are The Italian Wine Connoisseur, A 7-Day Guide to Mastering Italian Wine, and The Ultimate Italian Wine Tour Pocket Guide. So if you're planning an Italian escapade and you love wine, like Ellie and me, definitely check out Ellie's books and...
and follow me.
Follow her.
On iloveitaly.wine.
At iloveitaly.wine across all social media channels. Ellie, thank you so much. And hopefully you'll come and chat to us again.
Of course we will. Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
See you in the next one, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Stand Out. Our podcast can be found in all the podcast platforms, and you can check out all the links and resources mentioned and catch up on all episodes at www.monogrampublishers.co.uk.